So, I have 30 minutes to summarize 30 years of achievements in metastatic non-small cell lung cancer. It's not an easy job. But the last 10 years were so promising and so enthusiastic. So please, if you can hang on with me for the last 10 slides. What has really changed during the last 30 years? So if you look at the slide here, this was the survival of our patients with metastatic lung cancer in the 1980s. So we knew that chemotherapy is not better than nothing. And whatever you do to your patient, he will live almost 5 months. 30 years later, subset of patients can have a median survival of almost 18 months. So what has really changed? What drifted our graph from 2 year survival of zero to 2 year survival of almost 40%? If I want to summarize my talk, I would think if I was a physician in 1993, I would say when a patient come to me, I need to know if he has a small cell or non-small cell. I don't care if he has non-small cell, I don't care about the subtype. I know that my chemotherapy will work probably, hopefully, and I don't have any novel interesting agent for my patient. Now, if I work now in the 2014, yes, I need to know if my patient has small cell or non-small cell. But if he has non-small cell, I need to know if he has a squamous or non-squamous, so subtypes histology has big impact. Of course, chemotherapy is a mainstay of treatment, but nowadays we use more and more maintenance treatment. We have several proven novel agents. Integrated and early palliative care services are very important, as you're gonna see. And we're tending towards genotyping of non-small cell lung cancer. So during the next 25 minutes, I will talk about these six issues that drifted our graph from 5 months to 18 months. I will start with the most easiest one, palliative care treatment. So Jennifer Temel got this idea, so she told her colleague at Mass General, go treat your patient whatever you like. Give them whatever chemotherapy you like. And I will randomize your patient into two groups. The first group, you will treat them alone. And the second group, when they came to your office to see you, just call me. And whenever they go to the hospital for a complication, please call me. I don't need more than that. And she proved that with her team, if she integrated an early palliative care treatment for patients with lung cancer, there is a significant improvement in overall survival. And she published her work in New England Journal of Medicine. It was a big shock for all oncologists all over the world. First of all, we discovered that we oncologists, we don't know how to treat patients. We just throw on them chemotherapy, but we don't know how to treat symptoms, we don't know how to treat complications. And the second thing, it was a big thought that the money that we're putting and investigating in new novel agents, it's not the only way. Maybe putting in each hospital an early palliative care integration in the treatment of our patients might improve their survival. So I think that was the first achievement in lung cancer over the 30 years. We know better how to treat our patients and their complications. Second achievement. So in 2002, there was a study. So all patients with lung cancer were randomized to four treatment arms. These are the treatment options available for lung cancer at that time. You give them platinum with whatever chemotherapy, and your patient will live the same. So we had a ceiling for improved benefit of cytotoxic chemotherapy. The fact was in 2002, when you have a non-small cell lung cancer patient, you give them whatever chemotherapy with platinum compound, the response rate is around 30%, median survival 9 months, 1 year survival 35%, and 2 year survival 10%. But then the WHO 2004 told us that, as you all know now, lung cancer, it can be small cell, non-small cell, and if it is non-small cell, it can be squamous or non-squamous, mainly adenocarcinoma and large cell carcinoma. This was very important for us because we just knew that there are some medications that work better for some subtypes of lung cancer. And it is the GMDB trial. So patients with lung cancer, whatever histology, non-small cell lung cancer, were randomized into Alimta and cisplatin or gemcitabine and cisplatin. And gemcitabine and cisplatin is present here. So it is as good as other chemotherapy agents. And the trial was very interesting because if we take all patients, the survival curve is the same. But if you take only adenocarcinoma patients, there is a significant increase in overall survival and the P is significant. So nowadays, if I have a patient with adenocarcinoma, I have to treat him with Alimta cisplatin. I cannot give him other chemotherapeutic agents, so subtypes matter. And since Alimta is better tolerated than other chemotherapeutic agents, now the standard of care for adenocarcinoma patient is Alimta cisplatin. It is one of the options. And if you have other histologies, you can give them whatever chemotherapy you want if you have squamous cell carcinoma. Third improvement, maintenance treatment. So usually when we get a patient, like in 2004, we tell the patient with metastatic disease, I will give you 4 to 6 cycles of treatment, and then he will do a scan and come back to the clinic. You will tell the patient, good, you have a good response to the treatment, but I need to stop now your treatment, because look how harsh the treatment was on you, and there's no benefit of giving you more. And the patient tell you, what I will do now, then I'll go home, and when the cancer come back to me. So if you find the medication that it's not so harsh, you can tolerate it, maybe it's ideal to continue giving him until the cancer comes back. That's the idea of the maintenance treatment. And since Alimta is one good option because it's well tolerated, there were 2 trials on them. I will stick to the Paramount trial. So all patients with adenocarcinoma, they need to have adenocarcinoma. They received 4 cycles of Alimta cisplatin, and then if they have a good response, they were randomized to continue with Alimta alone or nothing, like you were using to do. Very beautiful slide. So an increase in overall survival, a significant increase in overall survival. Look how much now, the median survival for patients who have maintenance treatment is around 14 months, it's not 9 months. And the 2-year survival is 32%, it's not 10%. So up till now, these are the achievements. So you need to know what's the subtype. If it is an adenocarcinoma, you need to give maintenance treatment, of course, for fit patients and patients who have response. Another achievement, angiogenesis. So for cancer cell to grow, it needs to have blood supply for nutrition, for oxygen. So this is what you call angiogenesis. And we know that for blood vessel to come to the cancer cells for this neovascularization, it needs a protein that we call a VEGF, vascular endothelial growth factor. So a high level of VEGF is correlated with poor survival of our patients. That's the theory. And the theory, if we have a medication that blocks this VEGF, so if you have a medication that blocks this VEGF, there will be no binding to the VEGF receptor, and there will be no angiogenesis, and we suppose that the cancer cell will die. If you go into practice, this is the ECHO 4599. So the standard of care in the United States is carboplatin, and these patients were randomized as usual to 6 cycles of carboplatin, or carboplatin and Avastin. And we continue the Avastin. So it's a form of maintenance treatment. This is another example of maintenance treatment. So you stop the chemotherapy after the 4 to 6 cycles, and you continue with the Avastin alone. And again, there is an increase in survival. And then things stopped. We know now that you have to give chemotherapy and you give maintenance treatment, and you can get survival around 13 months, 14 months if we are lucky. The new era of treatment now is targeted treatment. The idea is that the cancer cell to grow, there is a mutation in these cancer cells that drive the cancer cell to grow. And if we know this mutation and we target this mutation, so the cancer cell will shrink quickly and the patient will live longer. The first paper was in the New England Journal of Medicine by Thomas Lynch. It's the same group of Mass General Hospital. So he published it in the New England with 9 patients. So in his publication, he said, look, I have 9 patients who have this mutation, this EGFR mutation, and I gave them a medication that blocks the mutation. And my patient did very, very well. Look how much they did well. And then since this mutation needed months to be done, so he tried to correlate the incidence of this mutation in subgroup of patients, because it was not so easy to be done and it was not in real practice. So we said, if you are a woman, non-smoker, you're from Japanese or Chinese origin, and you have adenocarcinoma, you have high chance of getting this mutation. So patients, all of them have adenocarcinoma or bronchoalveolar carcinoma. All of them are never or former smoker, and the majority of them are female. So what is this EGFR? So EGFR is a transmembrane protein. It belongs to a HER family. Maybe you know better the HER2 from breast cancer. So EGFR is the HER1 receptor, and it's expressed in a variety of normal tissue. It is the epidermal growth factor receptor. So whenever there is a binding to this receptor from a ligand, this receptor gets dimerized with another EGFR. And then the activity, the tyrosine kinase activity, intracellular tyrosine kinase activity, will be overexpressed, and there will be a lot of signaling into the cell for the cell to grow, for the cell to proliferate, to migrate, and for cell survival. This EGFR protein is encoded by a gene on chromosome 7, and the part that code for it, for the tyrosine kinase activity, is from exon 18 to 24. The most common mutation, activated mutation, that led to overexpression of this protein, of the activity of this protein, are 2 mutations. Deletion in the chromosome, deletion in the exon 19, and mutation in the exon 21, which is the L858R mutation. These are the most common activated mutations. Why it is so important and why we call it activated mutation, they are commonly termed activated mutations, because if there is a mutation in this gene, this will lead to the expression of an EGFR protein that is permanently activated. It doesn't need a ligand to get activated. It will be permanently activated. So we need to block this protein if it is activated. We need to block it. So for patients who have these mutations, and if we block the tyrosine kinase activity of the receptor, the cancer cell will die. That's in theory. Let's go to practice. So this is a EURTAC trial. It's an European trial. So patients who have these 2 mutations were randomly assigned to either Tarceva, a blocker of this mutation, it's an oral medication, or just standard chemotherapy. And the progression-free survival of patients who got the Tarceva is as much as the overall survival of patients who get chemotherapy usually. It's 9 months. And the overall survival of the group is around 18 months. Of course, you will not see difference between chemo and Tarceva for the overall survival, because there will be amendment on the protocol, and patients with these mutations got the Tarceva on the second line, well, up in progression. On the top, this medication has a little bit of toxicity, Iressa and Tarceva. There is no hematologic toxicity, little bit of liver enzyme disturbance, Q cutaneous rash, diarrhea, and a little bit of them had developed interstitial lung disease. What we don't know is why, if I have a mutation in the EGFR receptor, and a Chinese patient has a mutation in the EGFR receptor, he will live longer than me upon receiving the drug. So this is the optimal trial done in the Chinese population, and their progression-free survival is 13 months. They will receive the same drug. We don't drop chemotherapy because patients who benefit the most and who will live the longest are patients who get the Tarceva or Iressa on first line and get the chemotherapy on second line. If you get chemo alone, your survival is 10 months. You all know that. If you get targeted therapy alone, your survival is a little bit more. The best curve is if you receive both of them sequentially. So this was the first mutation. I move now to three other mutations. I will go quickly over them. So the second one is ALK rearrangement. So ALK rearrangement is present in 4% of non-small cell lung cancer. Patients also who have these mutations have adenocarcinoma, are young, and never smoker. What's very interesting, rarely these mutations are overlapping. There will be one driver for the cancer cells. It will be either an EGFR mutation or an ALK rearrangement. Rarely they overlap. And this rearrangement is a potent oncogenic, like an EGFR mutation. And crizotinib is a medication that blocks this rearrangement. And imagine you got the FDA approval on 80 patients only, for a study on 80 patients only. So this is a waterfall plot. Each line is a patient. If your line is down, it means that your cancer has shrinked. If your line is up, it means that your cancer has grown. If the line is below 30%, it's a partial response. If it is between 30 and 20%, it's stable disease. So as you can see, there were only two patients who have progressive disease on this medication. So the disease control rate is almost 95%. On the top, this drug can work on brain metastasis. You all know that whenever we have brain metastasis, we send the patient for brain irradiation. But these small molecules can work on brain metastasis. Third mutation, ROS1 rearrangement. Same group. You're going to see all the modern oncology was done by this group. So Alice showed that there is a ROS1 rearrangement in almost 1% of patients with non-small cell lung cancer. And patients who have this ROS1 rearrangement are also sensitive to crizotinib, the ALK inhibitor. And that's the kind of response that you can get if you have ROS1 rearrangement and you get crizotinib. Fourth mutation, BRAF mutation. You know that BRAF mutation is present almost in 50% of melanoma patients. And there are new treatments for them. We give them a targeted treatment to block this V600E mutation in the in mutated patients. Also, there are molecules that works on them. One of them is a drug that is not available now in Lebanon. That works well. You see the same kind of slide with these targeted therapies. Lately, there was a paper in the Journal of Clinical Oncology with the treatment of vemurafenib, which is a drug available in Lebanon for melanoma. So patients who are treated with this drug, which targets the BRAF V600E mutation, have excellent response. So I had myself a patient in Lebanon. I did EGFR mutation. It was negative. I did an ALK rearrangement negative, ROS1 rearrangement negative, and finally I did a BRAF. And that's the answer that I got for her. It is done by next generation sequencing. And she has a mutation in the BRAF, the classical mutation V600E. And she got the drug available in Lebanon. And she had this excellent response. That's before and that after. in less than a month because the drug is so expensive. So I want to make sure that the drug is working before continuing giving her. Unfortunately, nothing lasts forever. So you have the mutation. So you have the mutation, you give your drug, but finally you will get a resistance on the drug. I will give the example of the mutation of the EGFR because they are the most common. So the most common, we call it secondary mutation, is the T790M mutation. So that's how our patient escaped from our targeted therapy. They got a secondary mutation. And if you want to look, it's not the only way of escaping from our drugs. So if we look at the EGFR mutated patient, 50% of them will have this secondary mutation. But look at this, 15% will get small cell lung transformation. So lately, Jean-Charles Soria, I'm sure you all know, he works at the EGR because the majority of the oncologist in Lebanon went to the Institut Gustave Roussy. So he worked on this novel drug which targets this mutation. So there's a new drug who targets patients who have EGFR mutated and T790 mutation. And he has an excellent response to the drug with little toxicity when compared to Tarceva, lesser rash, lesser diarrhea. Lot of mutations. So practically, your patients, if you want to do it sequentially, as I did with my patient, you need 2 months to get all the mutations to be done. Because we do it sequentially, so we don't use all the paraffin block. So we do one up after the other, so the patient block stays. So the new idea now of treatment of non-small cell lung cancer is genotyping. What is genotyping? So if we have a group of patients with lung cancer, some of them, and we give them a drug, some of them will get an excellent response to the drug. Some of them, the drug will work for a short time, and then they will have resistance. Some of them will die from your medication. It's toxic death. And probably the majority of them, the drug will not work. So if we can genotype the cancer cells of each patient, so we can choose what medication to give to them, and not giving OPIV, like my title of my presentation. So it's not like in the 2002. You have non-small cell lung cancer, get whatever chemotherapy, and you will live the same. So we need to genotype our patient. What mutation does he have? What mutation confers a higher toxicity to the medication? And this kind of snapshot, we call the snapshot analysis. And we can see from this slide that patients who have non-small cell lung cancer adenocarcinoma, half of them, we don't know what is the mutation. We don't know what is the driver yet. 25% of them will have a KRAS, and we don't have a medication for KRAS mutated patients. 13% will have EGFR, and we give them Tarceva. 5% will have ALK, and give them crizotinib. BRAF mutation, 2%. HER2 mutated, we give Herceptin. So if we know what's the driver of the cancer, we know how to hit it. So my conclusion for today, there is a slow, of course it's 30 years and only 1 year of increase in survival. There is slow but steady improvement in the survival of our patient over 30 years. Our patients need multidisciplinary management. We need the input of you, pulmonary physician, because oncologists don't know how to treat their patients. We need the input of the pathologist with all these new mutations that we have. And I think it's a good idea in Lebanon, so we have a national registry for mutation in non-small cell lung cancer. At least what is done here is the EGFR and ALK, so we know exactly what is the percentage of mutation in our population. Thank you.
Merci beaucoup. Je pense qu'on a du temps pour simplement 2 questions. Je vais en profiter pour poser la première. Quel est le délai de réponse au Liban pour avoir un statut EGFR? Est-ce que vous le faites systématiquement? Est-ce que, et en combien de temps vous avez une réponse?
C'est un standard maintenant, dès qu'on a un adénocarcinome, c'est un standard mondial même au Liban d'avoir un EGFR. D'habitude, ça prend moins qu'une semaine. Et puis, et c'est fait for free. Le patient, il ne paie rien pour l'examen. La deuxième étape serait de faire un réarrangement ALK. Et ça prend presque 10 jours. Donc, en général, on a la réponse non-small cell lung cancer, need immunohistochemistry. And on envoie immunohistochemistry. And then, on reçoit la deuxième réponse, c'est un adénocarcinome. Donc, première semaine pathologie, deuxième semaine immunohistochimie, troisième semaine EGFR, quatrième semaine ALK. Pratiquement, ça prend un mois. Et imagine qu'on va continuer avec le BRA. D'où l'idée de ce genotyping, ce snapshot, qui peuvent vous faire toutes les analyses.
Merci beaucoup. Une question dans la salle, s'il vous plaît.
Thank you for a very informative talk. I just wonder, can you tell us what is the rough incidence of EGFR mutations and KRAS mutation in this region?
In Lebanon? So, I work in Hotel Dieu, so I can give only because we did some small studies. I don't have any incidence of ALK. There are two reported cases of ALK in Lebanon, in almost 100 of patients done, and one is not Lebanese, he's Iraqi. And for EGFR, it's around 7%. But the Lebanese population are heavy smokers, so that's a big issue. We still smoke much, much more than European countries.
Merci beaucoup. Donc, merci pour votre participation, votre attention. Et puis, nous avons maintenant un symposium. Vous avez un quart d'heure de battement.